Hi, my name is Dawn Smith Theodore. I'm a marriage and family therapist who specializes in the treatment of eating disorders. I'm a former professional dancer, also a former dance studio owner in Los Angeles. I am recovered from anorexia, and I'm also the author of a book called Tutu Thin, A Guide to Dancing Without an Eating Disorder. The Tutu Thin podcast will explore the complex relationship between dancers, athletes, their body image, and the prevention of eating disorders. As always, you can reach me through my website at dawntheodore.com. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the Tutu Thin podcast. My name is Dawn Smith Theodore, and today it is my utmost honor to welcome Mia Mormino, who I've known since she was 3 years old. She was a student at my dance studio, but I actually haven't seen her for, well, I saw her once in the past probably 6 or 8 years. And that one time was at the Viper Room where she was performing. And so Mia is going to talk to you about her journey from high school, because that's really the last time I saw her, although I hear from her once in a while. But it's like her career has certainly taken a journey, and I want to know all about it. So, yeah. Mia, tell us how you got here, and tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
Yeah, so thank you for having me. First of all, I'm so excited. I'm a singer-songwriter, and I've been making music professionally for about 6 years now. And like you said, I've known you for my literal entire life, and I've had like so many core memories with you in it and because of you. So I love you, and I always have, and I always will. And I, for my whole childhood, I went back and forth between wanting to be a professional singer and then a professional dancer and then a dancer and a singer and then just a dancer and then just a singer. And after high school is when I really tapped more into the singer aspect, because I did dance from age 3 until now, but competitively for so many years and so intensely for so many years, which was amazing. And I love and cherish every single moment I have with being a dancer and growing up a dancer. But I think as I got a little bit older and after high school, I had like first boyfriend breakup and messy friend, like that kind of stuff. I felt that I was too, and maybe not insecure, but I wasn't confident enough in myself to speak up for like what really mattered to me and really just ask for respect as a person. And so as much as I loved dancing as a way to like get those feelings out, I felt like, you know what, instead of speaking up to this person, maybe I'll try like writing a song about it, because I love singing. I love writing and everything under the creative umbrella. So I did. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I don't have to confront anyone ever again in my life. And I get to make this music. This is perfect. I figured it out. And so I just ran with it, and quickly learned that you still do have to confront people. And it's important to actually have conversation about, hey, you know, I didn't like the way that felt, or for next time, can we do things differently? But writing music has helped me so much with finding my own voice, like musically, but just as an individual. And I feel like the reason I've been able to have certain conversations throughout the years is because I found it within me to channel that energy into a song. So I'm like, okay, if I can do this in a song, I can do this in real life. Even though I don't have like a cool production and a cool beat to back me up, I can still get across what I'm trying to say. So that's really like been a huge turning point for me. And I'm just so happy that I get to do this, and there are people that love and support this idea of me speaking up and making songs, and I still dance and I still train, and it's all just a whole bunch of creative stuff over here. And I love it.
I mean, it's so funny that you said that about speaking up for yourself, because I just did last night I was making videos for Instagram, and one of them was on learning that people are afraid to confront, they're afraid of confrontation. And so I said, you know, have you ever been afraid to confront somebody? And if so, like, think of it as not confronting them, but talking about how you feel. I feel blank, not you made me, but you know, it's what I teach my clients. And, and it makes it so much better, because the truth is that it is, nobody can argue ever with your feelings. And so if you're expressing them in a song, they definitely can't argue with them.
Especially if it's catchy. I'm like, I know you like this song. I know it's catchy. I know it's stuck in your head.
So tell us a little bit about your road. Cause I mean, a gazillion people want to be songwriters and singers, and you've been singing your whole life. I know that. So tell us a little bit about your journey and what it's been like.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely been a roller coaster, and because this is something that, I mean, I don't come from like parents that were in the music industry. Like, my dad moved out here to be an actor, but that he didn't really love it. Like, he wanted to be a superstar, but he didn't want to do the work. And that's what he's told me. I'm not just like, judging him. But yeah, so I didn't really have anyone that could help me within the music industry. And the people that my dad know and knew weren't really in that field or in that state anymore. Like, it was kind of moved on. So much and of it has been me just figuring things out on my own. And I've had, you know, producers along the way that have helped guide me. I've had voice teachers, I've had my family. But at the end of the day, like, I still am the one that's making these decisions and choosing what I think would be best for me. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. And I have an equal amount of both of those things in those categories. But I feel like just being able to appreciate all of those moments, it has been what's made this so fun for me, because it's all a learning experience. And I feel like you're never too old to learn, and you could do something for years and there's still little things that you might not have known. So it's just, it's really fascinating, all these layers that I get to unpeel within the industry, but then within myself, because I'm like, oh, I never really have been in a position where I had to use this part of my brain or personality. So I'm intrigued to see, like, how do I respond? And then if it's in a way that doesn't make me feel good, why do I respond like that? Like, what happened when I was a kid? Like, just a whole self-assessment analytical process, but it's also so creative. So it's like a perfect balance for my brain. And yeah, that's been like the more emotional, like, psychological part of it. But I mean, I've worked with a lot of different people. I've found, like, people through people. Like, I had a voice teacher, and I talked to her and was like, you know, I want to like record this song. I want to do something with it, but I don't know where you even go for that. And then she connected me with someone she worked with, and then we worked together for a really long time. And then I dated someone, a musician, and then I met my current guitar player and boyfriend. They're two separate people. They're all separate people, but I met everyone through this one boyfriend. And then now we all make music together and have been doing it for so long, and we all perform live together. So it's like, you just never know who you're going to meet through what person in your life. And I love it, because looking back, I'm like, oh my God, if this wouldn't have happened, if I didn't work at this job and didn't go in to get a smoothie on this day, I wouldn't have met you. And then if I didn't meet you, I wouldn't be here. So it's really cool. And it's always like that. And I just love it. So that's in a nutshell.
Okay. So I want to know, like, you have written, I was amazed, music for all kinds of TV shows. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's one of those things that I really didn't even know was a possibility. And I definitely didn't seek opportunities that involved that. But through my, this guy and then the people that I met through him and all that stuff, this one guy, was a producer, and he asked me during COVID, was like, "Hey, you know, I make music for like TV shows, like, and they get pitched TV shows and movies, and they're asking for an R&B album and they're looking for female vocalists. Like, would you be down to do something like that?" And I was like, "Sure, I have never done anything like this. And I get to get paid for making songs. Like, absolutely, I will do this." But more so just because it was like such a new experience. And so I started, and I recorded them in my room with a blanket over my head and sent them over. And then they did really, really well and have been in so many different TV shows, like all across the world. Those songs on my streaming platforms are like the highest streaming songs because they've been placed in so many commercials and movies and TV shows and sports channels and like in like all these different countries that I didn't even know were a thing, like having these specific sports channels in these countries. And so after working with him and with this company, they like, we kind of like did our own thing. And then during COVID, I put out like a rap song because I didn't know what was going on in the world. So I was like, you know what, let me just be a rapper for like 5 seconds. And I was like, I could do this. And I did. And it was a little cringy, but it was fun. And that company heard that song and they were like, "Hey, we really liked that song. Can you make one like that for us?" And I was like, "Are you sure?" That one? Like, I can sing. Like, I can hold a nice tune. Like, this one, I'm just being sassy, but whatever you want, sure. So we made that song. And then it kind of just kept happening like that, where I'd release my own music and this company, same company, would hear it and be like, "Hey, that was really cool. Do you want to maybe do like something for that for us?" And I was like, "Sure." And then it just kept going. And then they asked me to make an album for them. And we had like a 40-person string section in Poland, like add live violin and cello. And then we had a 12-person choir in the UK, add live like choir backgrounds. And it's just so crazy. Like, I never thought that this would be a place that I'd be at. And I love it because it's given me so many opportunities to connect with so many people like across the world that I probably wouldn't have connected with otherwise.
So the string quartet is, or the strings are in Poland. The singers are in the UK and you're in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Does it all get put together and laid on top of each other?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing.
And it was so cool. And we got to be there on Zoom and watch it happen. And there's like 12 people in the studio. Like, for this, I've never felt so important as a singer than I did in those moments, because I'm like, wow, all these people are in a different country working on an album that I wrote, and I'm singing on all these songs, and they're listening and they're making sheet music for these songs. And there's all these people in the studio working on these songs, and I'm not paying for it. Like, this is crazy. Like, I'm getting paid to do this. And it was one of the coolest moments. And then hearing the final product, it just made it so much more exciting. 'Cause I'm like, wow, I know these are real people, like, playing all these instruments and singing. And it was awesome. It was so cool.
So where did that song end up?
So that album was specifically made to be pitched for like movie trailers. Uh-huh. So very cinematic and dramatic, bold, big, like James Bond trailer kind of stuff. But anyone can use it essentially. And so one of the really big placements we got was this Korean skincare line, and it's called Hola, I think. And they made like a ad or commercial or with a really famous Korean actress. I don't know her name, but they used one of the songs from it. And it was the coolest, like the most perfect visual I could have imagined for this song. Like, it's this girl and this guy, and he's like going to fight her, but she fights back, and that she's all like grungy makeup and messy hair. And then she quickly gets ready with like the skincare, and then she like walks out and she's in this big ball gown, and all these guys are like, wow, like, wow, it's like my ideal life. So it was so cool.
That's very fun. Yeah. So basically you make these that you, since I'm a dancer and I know nothing about music, I should, but you make these albums and they go somewhere where then they get bought or listened to by different TV shows, and then they can just use it. So you sell it basically.
Yes.
To okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's all made specifically for these companies. So it's not like a song that I make and I write and release on my own and I own all the rights to it. Like, we know going into it, okay, we're not really going to own much of it. Like, sometimes we do, but it just depends on the deal. So it's a lot more, as a very emotional person, if I were asked to like sell the rights to one of my like really personal songs, that would be super hard for me, because I'm like, no, it's like selling a piece of me and I don't ever want to do that. But with these songs, I'm like, okay, I know that these are specifically made for these people. Like, it's a lot more specific with the lyrics. Like, they can't include, any like brand names or like definitely not like drugs or alcohol or anything like that. But it's very specific because it's like their client, like we're being hired to like make this music, but it's really fun and it's fun music. So it never feels like work.
Well, when you're doing something that you love, it never feels like work.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is the truth.
Okay. So what's your favorite genre of music for you? Like, what is it that you like to write and perform?
Yeah, I would say my favorite music to sing is jazz music. I love singing jazz, and I actually sing it every week at a restaurant. And so that's like one avenue of my musical passions.
Okay, hold on. What restaurant do you sing at?
It's called Nona. It's an Italian restaurant in Westlake. And every Sunday night I sing for 3 hours, and I sing nothing current past like 1960. Like, that is the most current I go. Everything is from the 60s back. Like, oh. Yeah. So that's like one of my strongest loves is jazz and everything within that. But I don't really like write jazz or record jazz, because I feel like that's like a whole different path. And as more of like a pop writer, I think I'd have to kind of start a new persona if I wanted to go full jazz. But as pop Mia, I do, I like to do a lot of like edgier, a little bit darker, cinematic, like nothing like Taylor Swift or anything, nothing like too commercial, cookie cutter, like radio pop, I would say. It's just it's a little like a little darker, a little edgier, but I love it, because every song that I create is a little bit different from the next one, and they're all like different parts of me. So all of my music collectively makes up who I am, but each song is like a different persona, like a different piece of me that I'm like, oh, I'm gonna really tap into this part of me. And then the next one is like, okay, well, now I'll be like a soft little princess frolicking in the grass. But then the other one's like, okay, now I'm gonna rob a bank. And that's all makes up me.
Okay. I didn't know you sang at a restaurant. And I actually think I frequent that restaurant. Is it in by the Target?
No, it's not. It's not by Target. It's right next to Sushi Planet. And it's across from, there's like Vons, there's Sprouts, there's a Starbucks, Mendocino Farms, Finney's.
Okay.
It's right across, literally like right across the street. And it used to be called Bellini, I think, something like that. But it's always been like an Italian restaurant of some sort. But Yeah.
I'm going to have to come see you on a Sunday night.
Yeah. Oh, it's so fun.
when I was dancing in Japan, the place that I danced had a theater that seated, I think, 2,500 people upstairs, but they had a jazz piano lounge in the underneath. And this person who became like my mom, her name was Vivian Lord Alge, and she was a jazz singer. And I fell in love with just her raspy voice. And, you know, she was like from the, you know, she was singing like 40s, 50s, 60s jazz songs. So very cool. I love that.
Yeah.
So then let's go to your edgier Mia and or pop Mia. And that's what you perform like when you go to the Viper Room, or I'm going to come see you at Whiskey A Go-Go on Sunset.
Oh, thank you. So that music is definitely more pop. It's very pop, but a lot edgier. But I mean, sometimes I'll throw in like a jazzy song because I can't help it. And I'm like, oh, I want people to know that I love this. This is a whole other part of me. But the music that I sing when I perform live is usually more upbeat, just something you can like dance to. And then I'll throw in like a couple really sad ones just to show diversity because I love sad music too. but yeah, those songs and performing live is just my favorite thing ever. Performing has always been my favorite thing. With dance, recitals, competitions, senior homes, pumpkin patch, like that has been my favorite thing. And that is still true to this day with performing while I sing. Like there, it's like a whole different person comes out. And I feel like that's like my actual person who's just super confident and doesn't overthink and is unapologetically themselves. And then when I get off stage, I'm like, oh no, I have to worry about everything. And I'm really anxious and insecure. So I'm trying to like tap more into that part of me because that is my true self. Everything else is just unnecessary.
Well, yeah. This part up here in that brain overthinks and it makes you doubt yourself, and you have to really challenge that. But the outside and the inside have to match, you know, like if performing Mia is who you are, the inside needs to have that confidence too. And I don't think you could get out and do the things you do unless you had that confidence, you know. But I'm curious as to like, how do you book yourself into such high places? For Los Angeles, those are pretty big places. So
yeah,
Viper Room, Whiskey A Go-Go, like those are hot spots in Los Angeles.
Yeah, those like in LA, there's a kind of like a circuit or a company that puts on shows at all different places, but small, way super small bars. And I started doing those when I was like 20, which was 19 or 20, which was a little bit of an issue because I couldn't, as soon as I was done singing, I had to leave because I wasn't 21 yet. I've started around that age, and these bars and these places were great. But after a while, like I felt like I kind of outgrew them in a sense, because I would sell a lot of tickets and a lot of people would come, and the way it was organized just kind of wasn't good at all. And so as someone who was just starting out, it was great because they really took care of a lot of the middleman stuff where I was like, I don't know where I should get a flyer made. I don't really know any of this stuff. But as I've gotten more experienced and older, I'm like, okay, there are certain things that I know I would do differently if I were kind of doing this more myself. And so a couple of years ago, like a different talent booker reached out to me, and that's when I did the Viper Room show. And she has like a little bit bigger venues. And then because I did really well with the Viper Room show, I was asked to headline the Roxy last summer. And then because of that show, I was able to get the whiskey because I have like the draw to back it up. Like I might not have the biggest numbers on social media, but I know how to sell tickets. I know how to put on a good show. So that's kind of been, it's like a stepping stone process. Like I've started at the bars that were so small. The sound was so bad. it's some of those places, the sound still is crappy, but you got to go through those ones to then get to like the Roxy where it was like everything. I went on stage early, which has never happened ever in the history of my performances. I've gone on stage an hour late, not because of me, but because the show gets pushed back because someone's 5 minutes late, and then that turns into 10 minutes late and it just keeps going. But with this one, it was just, I had a dressing room. I was like, I think I'm Beyonce. It was crazy. They were like, do you want any water in the room? I was like, I would love some water. Thank you. So it was so cool. But if it weren't for those smaller bars and the or unorganized crew and situations and set times and all that, it wouldn't be so cool. And I wouldn't be able to do these venues now. So it's really like you have to start at the way bottom, and then you just got to keep going and you can't give up, because if I would have given up, I would have never played at the Roxy or never been able to play at the Whiskey or the Viper Room, like all this stuff. And it just keeps growing, but you have to like stick it out when it gets hard. So,
I mean, it's amazing. And it's true. We all have to start at the bottom and move forward, but and not give up. Like, I think that's another thing, is that people get frustrated and they give up, and you just can't give up.
You can't. Whether you want. Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, I don't care if you're a singer or a dancer or an athlete or whoever you are. It's like you just have to keep putting one foot in front of the other and trying something new. And that's amazing.
Thank you.
I'm sorry I missed the Roxy because I had just come in from London, I think, or something.
No, it's okay. Yeah. No, I don't even worry.
But I'll be at the Whiskey a Go-Go.
Okay.
So tell me, like, what is advice that you would give to up and coming, whether it's a dancer or a singer or whoever it is? What would you say to them? Like, what's something you've learned along the way that you would want to pass on to somebody else?
Sorry, cut out for 1 second. Just say that last part one more time.
What is something that you have learned along the way that you would want to pass on to somebody else?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I think it's so much easier to give advice than to like apply it to yourself. So any advice that I give anyone, I'm like, I really can't even talk because I'm doing the complete opposite of what I'm advising you to do, but it's a good reminder for myself. But I would say if you want it, like if you want it bad enough and if you like really want to pursue this, whatever field it is, and you want to be the best at it or whatever, you got to keep going. You cannot let the little things steer you off track, because that's when you could go down other paths that you weren't intending on going on. And it gets really hard, especially I think with social media, the ability to compare yourself is so easy nowadays. It's too easy. And I fall into this trap every single day of thinking that I'm like, oh, if I only was like her, if I could sing like that or whatever. But that's where you're wasting your own time, because that time spent could have been put towards something that would have actually helped you and your career. So just to keep going and allow yourself the strength to push through when those times get really hard. But it's very hard, and I don't do it like 80% of the time. So I'm like, don't listen to me, but don't listen to me.
Okay. So are you able to stay focused on you, or like, do you get distracted by other people and comparing yourself? Because comparing, you are your own individual. You're unique. You're not like anybody else. You're not going to sing like anybody else. So why are you comparing yourself?
I don't know. I think that's just something that I've always done. I mean, as a dancer, especially with my body, especially. So that from as long as I can remember has always been an issue. And and something that up until when I started like really going to therapy like intensely, I never really realized how much that affects my life in every category, not just with my body, but with anything that I feel that I'm less than with. So it's like consciously I know there's no purpose and it serves no point to compare myself, but subconsciously it's like little me in the backseat being like, oh, but we aren't good enough because of X, Y, and Z, which isn't true, but it's having that maturity and that knowledge and awareness to be like, okay, we're in, like adult or young adult me is in control. Little Mia is not. She can be here with us, but she's not driving the car. Like, she's a child. And I have my license, so it's my car.
Well, and also it's like little Mia had her own experience, but you know, it's like now you have to have your own experience as adult Mia and, exactly. You know, and hold the memories of what it was like. That was hard, but you know, I'm doing what I want to do. Like, mm-hmm. How many people can actually say they're doing what they want to do and actually mm-hmm. enjoying doing what they want to do? And you also had a dance teacher that never talked about body image, mm-hmm. like in a positive or negative way. It mm-hmm. was never talked about.
Mm-mm. Never. It never was. But in school, I was bullied for not being like the skinniest, even though I was in fourth grade and had like little baby fat still. And so that's where it started, was definitely school. Because yeah, in dance, no teacher I'd ever taken from had ever told me anything about my body, about how a body should be. And I feel bad for the people that have had teachers like that, because I'm like, I can't even imagine where the path and the words and the narrative that you tell yourself, because you were once told that. So I am so lucky that I didn't have any of that, but there still is the narrative I was told from other people outside of dance. And then then going to dance and being in a leotard and being like, wait, so maybe they are right. Cause I never really realized I didn't maybe look like some of the other girls, but now that it's been brought to my attention by people outside of the dance world, I guess I am. And then that's where that whole thing starts. And then it just explodes.
It's really interesting because it makes me sad, because I didn't know any of that was going on. And, you know, I probably could have helped along the way if I would have known. But, you know, oh, well,
it is definitely a lot better, and I feel a lot better about it than I probably ever have. But there are still many, many moments where I let the voices of myself and of other people, and other people being other fourth graders, like get to me. And I struggled with binge eating and then starving myself, and then on the rare occasion like throwing up because of it. And I luckily have outgrown that extreme, which I'm super thankful for, because that was like a really bad time for a really long time. But now it's more of the mental narrative of like, okay, I have so much to be thankful for, and I have a body that can walk and run and dance and function, and I have a beautiful body, and I'm curvy. Like I have a great body, but when I look in the mirror, sometimes I get brought back to like the times when I would look in the mirror and my body would change like right in front of my eyes, and I thought I was going crazy, but I'm like, oh, that's just body dysmorphia. Like I didn't know what that was at the time, because I will never forget it. I was standing right here looking in the mirror, turned to the side, and I was like, my stomach is growing. Like it's literally getting bigger, which it wasn't, because it's not possible. But I was like, this is nuts. Like I've never seen or heard anything of this. Like there has got to be something really wrong because this is not normal. And then I got a little bit older and did a little more research and a lot more therapy and was like, oh, that is actually a very specific thing that I didn't know there was a name for. And it kind of clicked and made sense. Like, oh, like all these other times, that's what that was. And I would binge eat because I would not eat. And then I'd go, or something bad would happen, and I'd use that as a coping mechanism. And then I'd feel so guilty the next day. I wouldn't eat for 3 days. And then I'd be so hungry that I'd binge eat. Like, it's just that cycle that just keeps going. And
hey, you don't have to tell me. You don't have to tell me. I mean, I live it on a daily basis with clients, but it just makes me sad that I didn't know it about you, you know, because you not only had a dance teacher, but you had somebody who understood about eating disorders. But you know, how I would reframe it is number one, fourth grade, what do they know? You need to challenge that. And, and the second part is that had you not gone through that, you wouldn't have those experiences to write about and to express your emotions. And whether you write about the body image or an eating disorder or whatever, you write from that emotion. And so, and that I think is where you have to go. And you always have to think about, like, I love the fact that you said my body allows me to, run and play and dance and do all these things. There's also a lot inside it. You have vocal cords. You're allowed to sing, you know, like we have to take care of our body because it's the only thing that we get. We get body, and that's, and so if you miss, it's like, it's really problematic. So I'm glad that you are doing better. And I really want you to think of all the things that you have accomplished and be positive about yourself.
Yeah. And it's like there, the biggest thing that I, the biggest spiral that I fall into is I over and over and over obsess about very like specific parts of my body that like, no, you wouldn't even think that would make me go crazy inside, but like they do. But I have to remind myself when I'm in those moments, I'm like, there is, I am so much more than this much of my stomach. Like, I am so much more than that. Like, my body serves way more of a purpose. I serve way more of a purpose than not having a flat stomach. Like, it sounds so silly when I'm just talking about it, not in that like really upset moment. But I have to work on remembering it in those moments, because I'm like, wait, this is there are way bigger things that we have that are way more important and way more special and meaningful, and allowing 6 inches of myself to control my life is ridiculous, but it has, and it still does. And I'm just trying every day to be a little bit stronger than that. And that's the tricky part, but there's so much to be thankful for. And then it's like, you know, when you're sick, all you want is to not be sick with a cold. Like, but you don't think about that when you aren't sick, because you just kind of take it for granted. So appreciating everything for what, like everything I have and everything that I've been able to experience is so important. And that's probably the biggest thing I have to focus on with self-confidence and all of that.
Gratitude. And gratitude, because when you have to belt something, it comes from way down there. And, you know, it's like, and also don't think of yourself as like cut up in pieces. You're one whole human being.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like there's no one that's like, you don't, when you address someone, you don't address, no one's talking to my stomach. They're talking to me as a person. And you're right. Like those really hard moments have allowed me to find power within those moments to write about them, but it's also helped so many other people. And that's what makes me really appreciate it, is like, there's a girl in France that found my music and she loves it so much. And she got one of my song titles tattooed on her. Like, that's like, I have Beyonce's lyrics tattooed on me. Like, that's like that's what I do for those, like the people that I idolize. So the fact that she felt so moved by one of my songs, that's like my song about depression and like suicide and all of that stuff, the fact that she felt so moved by that to have it as a constant reminder that she's enough and that she can get through things, like that's what makes me like, okay, this is, all of this is worth it because I'm helping people and I am making a difference. And that's really all I want with my career.
Yep.
So yeah.
That's what it's all about, is showing up in the world and making a difference for not only yourself, but for other people, you know? Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, you came to my book signing. That's why I wrote my book. It's like, it's, you know, it's about my journey, but it's also about the fact that you can still come out on the other end. You can have hard things mm-hmm. happen to you and you still come out on the other end. And so, mm-hmm. but you just have to learn to move through difficult times and mm-hmm. whatever that is. And so for the girl in France, great mm-hmm. that she has your music. Find something mm-hmm. that helps you get through difficult mm-hmm. times.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's like with your book too, because I read it and I loved it and I'm about to reread it actually, but it's such an example of like you taking the time to share those moments throughout your life that weren't easy by any means helps me and anyone else that reads it, because I feel like I'm not alone in the hard moments that I have to go through. So even though it's like, it's kind of scary sometimes to put yourself out there and to be vulnerable and open up about things that very few or no one knows, it's so worth it because it really does make such a difference. And now it's like, I've known you my whole life, but I didn't know anything really about you besides you being my dance teacher. And of course I knew Skipper, but that was kind of it. Like, I didn't really know anything else, because how could I was like a child. So being able to like have that opportunity to get to know more about you and anyone that chooses to put themselves out there in that way, like it's so beautiful and it helps so much, like so much. So thank you for doing that, because it helps me like a lot.
Well, I'm glad. Listen, I want to know, is there anything that you, any mantra that you say to yourself that keeps you going before you go on stage every day? What do you say to yourself?
I say a couple things. One thing that recently I've started saying to myself, because I was advised to start saying it to myself, is like, today is a new day. And it could be 11 o'clock at night, but if I start to feel or start to spiral in my own thoughts, I'm like, nope, today's a new day. I'm in control of myself. Like I am present. So that's more of like on an everyday basis. Before I perform, my dad and I have this saying that he more so says to me, and he tells me to paint the tree red, because in kindergarten I was painting my little tree and the teacher, I was painting it red, and the teacher was like, oh, you know, like brown and green are like tree colors. And I was like, well, that's weird. And so I came home and I was like, Dad, why'd you say that? Like, I don't get it. Why can't I just paint the tree red and do my own thing? And so he's like, Mia, just paint the tree red, like just do you. And so he tells me that, he's told me that before every recital, before every competition, before every talent show, every live show. And we have matching red tree tattoos on us, so that I will always remember it. So that's something that has been a constant phrase and reminder, and just to be like, wow, I wanted to do my own thing at a really young age, and I still want to do my own thing, and so I will. So that's the one.
Okay, that says it all, because that is, mm-hmm. you are your unique self, and mm-hmm. you're not going to let somebody else tell you what to do or how to do it. Paint the tree mm-hmm. red. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Thank you.
I wish everybody else had parents like that, that a dad that said, go ahead, mm-hmm. paint it red. It's mm-hmm. fine. Mm-hmm. Don't conform. So, exactly. You know, when you're on social media looking at, oh, what if I had this? Or what if I look like that? Or No, paint mm-hmm. your own tree, the color mm-hmm. that you want it to be.
Mm-hmm. It's so true. It's so true because no two people are the same. I love the phrase that no one is you and that is your power, because it's so true. I'm like, wow, like I will never be like her and she will never be like me. Not in a mean way, but it's impossible because we're our own people and completely unique and completely different from one another. And you can do something similar or take inspiration or sound like someone, yes, but you as a being, you are one of one. And there's so much power and strength and beauty in that. So it's like a constant reminder of being like, okay, I am enough. There's no other Mia Mormino that is like me.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm going to color my tree red.
Yes.
I love your smile just lights up the room. Now, our listeners can't see it, but I'm going to tell them. So hopefully they have the opportunity someday to see you perform, whether it's live or on a video or something. So thank you, Mia, for being a part of the podcast. It means a lot to me. You have a lot to add. And for the listeners of Too Too Thin, thank you so much for listening, for being a part of the podcast. As always, you can reach me through my website at dawntheodore.com, mothermenandme.com, which is my new book, tututhin.com, or on my Instagram at dawn.smith.theodore. Thank you so much and have a wonderful day. And as Mia says, remember to paint your tree red.